Hi! Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today.
There are several things that I hadn't thought of before until Nancy asked me two or three questions. And one threw me completely, which was about how my parents treated me and what impact that may have had on the way I brought up my kids. And that is something I hadn't really thought of. So there was some thought here that I was not anticipating, but I'm glad it happened.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. We have three sponsors for today's conversation. One is Priscilla Vang, who owns Payroll Vault franchise in St. Paul, Minnesota. And she also does tax solution and tax education. So with all the new tax laws in play now for this at the end of 2018, she's a good person to connect with to get the facts on what we need in order to file taxes properly. And at the same time, you can get a 50% discount on signing up on the setup fee for your payroll services. And then when you're done with that, check that off the list. You can sign up for Ursula Menchez, her sales camp, and hire a coach, sales coach now. Through salescoach.com. You know, once you've gotten your payroll and taxes done and set up, and you've registered for sales camp at Sales Coach Now, or you can go to wementor.com or scroll down to the bottom of this page and you will find her information, both of their information. If you can't go to the Great Metropolitan Back Rub in Minneapolis, maybe you can find another place and make sure that you get yourself a really good back rub. All right. Mike Cabea is in the studio. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Nancy.
How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, too. Mike and I are going to dialogue about a tough subject that we never discuss publicly, but feel we need to as leaders. We each have our own feelings and our own point of view. Mike and I are really great at having all kinds of conversations on a wide variety of topics. For those of you who are new listeners, welcome. Mike Cabea is my sound engineer, videographer, photographer, and mon frère, brother from another mother. He's just the most amazing person. And so...
Thank you very much, Nancy.
Oh, you're welcome. And so we're curious to see how we can grow in our leadership from talking about what we learned from reading the Pennsylvania 1,356-page grand jury report of the investigation into six Catholic dioceses. Covering 70 years of child sexual abuse from priests who are sexual predators. The important part in any conversation about a tough subject is, especially since this one is emotionally loaded, you know, many of us have grown up Catholic, and it's part of who we are, just like if you're Jewish, you know,
yes.
Very similar, or Muslim, or... Buddhist,
yes.
You know, it just becomes part of who you are. And so it's really important in these kinds of conversations that we take out any sarcasm, interruptions, premature judgment, any assumptions that we're making about what the other person is thinking, or anything negative. Our sole purpose in our conversation is to really make it comfortable for you to be able to talk about a tough topic and maybe give you some context and a framework in which you can set it up. Because in any great conversation, there are some really great guidelines that are put in place. So each person can hear each other We can summarize a little bit of what we're hearing of the other person, and we can really get a feeling deep in our heart, an empathic feeling of what they must be experiencing. And when you have these kinds of conversations, what I always experience is something wonderful that happens on the other end of it.
Absolutely.
And in preparation for this, you and I have had many conversations, and we were trying to figure out what's the best approach for this, how can we be most respectful. We already respect each other, but how can we kind of I've been all over the board with my emotions.
Yeah, it's a tough subject. Just like you said, Nancy, if you had to talk with someone like me, I was born and raised Catholic. You know, from my childhood, all I knew was, you know, in terms of spirituality or religion was Catholicism. You know, going to church, come back, and everything that surrounds that, saying the prayer before eating or before going to bed, and going to the Mass every Sunday.
Did you have a picture of the Last Supper?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah. We did, too, in our dining room,
Yeah,
right?
Like Da Vinci. Yeah, yep. We used to have that in our home all the way, you know, growing. And so it is difficult when you start facing some of the realities that start to put to doubt whatever you hold in high esteem, whatever you consider to be sacred. All of that start to be questioned as you see results or things happening like they've been depicted in this report from the grand jury. So it's difficult.
And how are you feeling about having this difficult conversation?
I am disillusioned.
Okay.
I should say. I feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it's about time that we decide to choose the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We got to come up with some solutions here. I'm saying we, but looking at the church hierarchy, you know, I'm looking at the government as well, because we are citizens of a country. We are governed. We have the laws.
Mm-hmm.
And I think nobody should be on top of the law.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's very disturbing. It's a very disturbing situation we find ourselves in. And like I was saying, now I think it's about time that some resolution came up in order to put an end to all this disorder.
Yeah, exactly. So and we've all experienced this. It isn't. Right now there's 1.2 billion Catholics. There were many, many more than that. And we've all grown up in some understanding of religious traditions. And so this information affects us all because we're recipients. We grew up in these cultures.
Absolutely. Nancy, allow me to say this right in front of this microphone. You taught my kids confirmation.
Yeah.
My first two kids just got confirmed like a little year ago.
Yeah.
As Christian. Now, the oldest just went to college this year. Meaning these guys hit a point where they can actually think deeply. And they come up with all sorts of questions. Now, put yourself in my situation. What am I supposed to provide as answer to my kids? How can I encourage these kids to still even go to church, which more and more starts to look like a very dangerous place?
Right, exactly. So, and you've got four kids. So,
yeah.
So two have been confirmed. And so what do you do with the other two? And, you know, there's just
that's
so
the right
many questions.
You know, I feel like it should be a good thing to have them confirmed as well, like their brothers. But you know what? The task is becoming harder and harder.
Yeah.
Not only within myself, because, you know, I'm wondering, you know, what's going on? Is this the right thing to do? You know?
Exactly.
And how about the kids themselves? They hear about all these reports. They hear about all sorts of abuses happening. Do they still feel safe to be around priests?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying it as I feel it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it is difficult. It is difficult. And quite disturbing. That's why, you know, from the time you told me we could talk about this, I hesitated a lot. I didn't know how to even start discussing about this topic.
Yeah.
So it's just challenging. It's really difficult.
Right. And we would also like to talk about some of the myths that, and we've been talking with a lot of other Catholics.
Yes.
And that's why I also felt compelled as a leader. And as we are both Catholics, we met in through the Catholic Church.
Yes.
We've been in the choirs together. We've been in leadership roles. And so I just felt like we are very credible to be able to have this conversation. We have a lot of different insights from different perspectives.
Absolutely.
And we've talked with a lot of Catholics.
Yes.
About this. And I find that many haven't read the report, which there's a lot to it. And so what we would like to do is I would read the report, the summary part, because there's seven behaviors or what they call the playbook for concealing truth. That was pretty astonishing, and I was horrified as I read it. I cried a lot. I journaled a lot. I did a lot of yoga, meditating, and decided not to go to church during this time. And so I want to read the report, and then we can talk about it. I want to give everybody the same information that we have.
Yes.
So that they can...
At least they have the picture of what's going on.
The grand, the big picture.
Because most people probably heard talking about the grand jury and the report on the TV or radio, and in very slightly descriptive terms, they didn't come up with a clear picture of what really is going on. So it should be good at times to pinpoint some of the facts or some of the stories that have been related in the report, so people have an idea of what's really going on.
Yeah, and they can discern for themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what they would like to do with the information that is here.
Sure.
And this is a lot of research. Here's the report summary. The 40th statewide investigating grand jury redacted report. So that means that some of the information is blacked out or censored or withheld subject to a subpoena. So they're just protecting the information that is not general knowledge yet. So in the report, like they had copies of different documents, and some of the names were blacked out because they're not in the report. And so that's out of respect for all those people. I'm reading the report as it's written. I'm not infusing any of my own information right now. And then after I'm finished reading it, Mike and I will talk about it. We, the members of this grand jury, need you to hear this. I should say, if you're listening with this podcast with young children around, I think that it's better that they don't hear this. But it's your call. So, in quotes, we, the members of this grand jury, need you to hear this. We know some of you have heard some of it before. There have been other reports about child sex abuse within the Catholic Church, but never on this scale. For many of us, those earlier stories happened someplace else, someplace away. Now we know the truth. It happened everywhere. we were given the job of investigating child sex abuse in 6 dioceses, every diocese in the state except Philadelphia and Altoona Johnstown, which were the subject of previous grand juries. These 6 dioceses account for 54 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties. We heard the testimony of dozens of witnesses concerning clergy sex abuse. We subpoenaed and reviewed 500,000 pages of internal diocesan documents. They contain credible allegations against over 300 predator priests. Over 1,000 child victims were identifiable from the church's own records. We believe that the real number of children whose records were lost or who were afraid ever to come forward is in the thousands. Most of the victims were boys, but there were girls too. Some were teens, many prepubescent, tough word. Some were manipulated with alcohol or pornography. Some were made to masturbate their assailants or were groped by them. Some were raped orally, some vaginally, some anally. But all of them were brushed aside in every part of the state by church leaders who preferred to protect the abusers and their institution above all. As a consequence of the cover-up, almost every instance of abuse we found is too old to be prosecuted. But that is not to say there are no more predators. This grand jury has issued presentments against a priest in the Greensburg Diocese and a priest in the Erie Diocese who has been sexually assaulting children within the last decades. We learned of these abusers directly from their dioceses, which we hope is a sign that the church is finally changing its ways, and there may be more indictments in the future. Investigations continue. But we are not satisfied by the few charges we can bring, which represent only a tiny percentage of all the child abusers we saw. We are sick over all the crimes that will go unpunished and uncompensated. This report is our only recourse. We are going to name their names and describe what they did, both the sex offenders and those who concealed them. We are going to shine a light on their conduct, because that is what the victims deserve. And we are going to make our recommendations for how the laws should change so that maybe no one will have to conduct another inquiry like this one. We hereby exercise our historical and statutory right as grand jurors to inform the public of our findings. The diocese's section of the report addresses each diocese individually through 2 or more case studies that provide examples of the abuse that occurred and the manner in which diocesan leaders managed it. While each church district had its idiosyncrasies, the pattern was pretty much the same. The main thing was not to help children, but to avoid scandal, in quotations. That is not our word, but theirs. It appears over and over again in the documents we recovered. Abuse complaints were locked up in a secret archive. That is not our word, but theirs. The church's code of canon law specifically requires the diocese to maintain such an archive. Only the bishop can have the key. The strategies were so common that they were susceptible to behavioral analysis by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. For our benefit, the FBI agreed to assign members of its National Center for the Analysis of Violent Crime to review a significant portion of the evidence received by the grand jury. Special agents testified before us that they had identified a series of practices that regularly appeared in various configurations in the diocesan files they had analyzed. It's like a playbook for concealing the truth. First, make sure to use euphemisms rather than real words to describe the sexual assaults in diocese documents. Never say rape, say inappropriate contact or boundary issues. Second, don't conduct genuine investigations with properly trained personnel. Instead, assign fellow clergy members to ask inadequate questions and then make credibility determinations about the colleagues with whom they live and work. Third, for an appearance of integrity, send priests for evaluation, in quotes, at church-run psychiatric treatment centers. Allow these experts to diagnose, in quotations, whether the priest was a pedophile, based largely on the priest's, in quotations, self-reports, and regardless of whether the priest had actually engaged in sexual contact with the child. Fourth, when a priest does have to be removed, don't say why. Tell his parishioners that he is on sick leave, in quotations, or suffering from, and I quote, nervous exhaustion, end quote, or say something, nothing at all. Fifth, even if a priest is raping children, keep providing him housing and living expenses, although he may be using these resources to facilitate more sexual assaults. Sixth, if a predator's conduct becomes known to the community, don't remove him from the priesthood to ensure that no more children will be victimized. Instead, transfer him to a new location where no one will know he is a child abuser. Finally, and above all, don't tell the police. Child sexual abuse, even short of actual penetration, is and has for all relevant times been a crime. But don't treat it that way. Handle it like a personnel matter, in quotations, in-house, end of quote. It's pretty astonishing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I think the church forever will be known as a church that raises pedophiles.
That's like providing security to a bunch of criminals.
Who have created we're talking about the most horrific crimes against children.
Oh, yeah.
And all the money. All the money.
And all the money.
That our money. We contributed this money. Now, where is it going? I mean, to know
used
that
to buy furniture and housing and everything for some criminals.
Right.
Who get away with it.
Yeah.
Unpunished. And who continue to be cared for.
Yeah. I mean, it's really shocking. Like, wow. I just feel really duped.
That's just breathtaking right there.
Yeah. So this is what's called rumbling. If we're rising strong or following Brené Brown's
yes.
process of rising strong, you start with reckoning, you know, mm-hmm. what your feelings are and what's going, you know, what happened.
Yes.
Well, this is what happened. We got this report.
Yes.
It validates a lot of what we've been thinking and experiencing over the years, but we could never quite pinpoint it because we've always been lied to.
Yes.
And then once you get the information, you have to rumble with it, you
yes.
know, like go through the feelings of it, feel the expansive range of emotions of it, and then slowly kind of unpack the truth. What is the truth of what has happened?
Yes.
And then where do I go from here?
Yes.
And I went through, I have a list of 16 suggestions that are... So the report, which in another conversation we'll have, we can go through
yes.
What the recommendations are.
Yes.
And I think then we can talk about what we would recommend.
Absolutely.
At this point, I'm just thinking that because I'm thinking this way because on October 23rd, in the Washington Post, D.C. Attorney General Carl A. Racine said that his office has begun an investigation of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy in the Archdiocese of Washington, the latest in the string of state-level law enforcement officials now looking into the Catholic Church's handling of abuse complaints. And I found out, and you can go to bishopaccountability.org, and there are 13 states that are currently running statewide investigations.
That's going to be a bomb right there.
This is huge. Because in Washington, D.C., so Cardinal Donald Wuerl, he just resigned as Washington's archbishop amid an uproar over this grand jury report that depicted systemic abuse across the state's Catholic Church, where Wuerl had been a bishop. And so Wuerl's D.C. predecessor, former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, was removed from ministry in June following allegations that he had sexually abused a teenager decades ago while serving as a priest in New York. So he got moved.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how they're pulling this together is they're suing the church as a nonprofit.
Yeah, that's going to be something, you know. That's going to be something. You have to say, first of all, that the demography of the Catholic Church have diminished to some degree, you know, almost from natural causes, I want to say.
Yeah.
More and more, the youth is absent from Catholic Church, you know. The numbers have diminished a lot. You have a bunch of people call themselves the new Catholic or the converted or whatever.
Or recovering
Catholics, yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of that. So that in itself has shaken the church pretty deeply. But I cannot put on top of that these kinds of reports and the consequences that will issue from them.
Yeah. And the reason that the state is going after suing the church as a nonprofit,
yes,
is because there are no statute of limitations.
Exactly.
So they can actually hold those accountable and give the victims the justice and the voice that they more than anything want to be heard. You know, this is a shaming experience. We need light on it.
Yes.
And we need to talk about it openly.
Yes.
And we need to have some validation that, yes, this did happen to you. This is horrific. And there are going to be changes made.
It is devastating. And sometimes the problem is that you quite don't understand when they say that a kid has been abused sexually, what that entails.
Yeah.
How that kid might lead the rest of their lives under pressure, under traumatic problems and psychological issues for the rest of their lives, for having undergone that treatment in their childhood. So this is worse than killing someone.
Yeah.
You know.
Because you're killing someone's soul.
Yes.
And you're polluting who they are through their faith in God.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And
such a person would need a lot of help to recover, in fact, to have a new sense of a relationship with God. Everything becomes compromised.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that person will have hard time to develop a sense of spirituality, of connection with the universe.
Yeah.
Because the faith, the origin, the grassroots of their faith has been undermined.
Yeah. And then the fact that no one has, like, validated the story, you know?
Yes.
But has said, no, that didn't happen to you, or lied to you blatantly. So it's even made it more complicated to
Very
get to the truth so that one can heal. And, you know, what's interesting is none of this is the church being forthright.
Exactly.
I mean, this report has come with them. They can say, oh, well, we opened all of our records. Well, how many decades?
How many decades? and you didn't do it on your own free will. It's out of pressure.
Right. So where is your conscience? And you're in charge of my moral development? I am officially resigning from Catholicism in all of its dimensions, right here on air, right now.
Oh, my God.
I know. Our family, so Matthew and Olivia and I, have had long discussions about this because to be part of a community where the right thing doesn't happen, or like we've had even our own priest has had his issues. And I called the archdiocese and they said, well, see, we did the right thing. You know, he was incarcerated, you know, overnight. I'm like, okay, and how is the community going to, you know, no one said anything. No one came in to have a healing. The priest didn't even have a chance to explain himself. I mean, it's just so bizarre and so against anything anyone would recommend of how you heal your heart. And we're supposed to go there to heal our heart? No, all that I've experienced being part of the Catholic faith has very dysfunctional relationships in my family. And I have met a tremendous amount of great people who, despite all the awful things that they've experienced in the Catholic Church, that they have increased and have a strong faith in God.
Yes.
But what I have struggled with is those who are telling me, you know, so if you're not going to church, where are you going to church? Well, I'm 57 years old. You know, I have found God, and Jesus Christ has been part of my life even when I questioned things.
Yes.
You know, my faith is very strong. I'm trying to be a good person every day.
And exactly. You just said something extremely important there that I wish we have a lot more time to talk about. It's that personal relationship with, you know, you call it what you want, Jesus Christ, God, or the universe, or energy. I think ultimately that's what we are all after. The church and the hierarchy and the clergy attempted, in fact, to be bringing people to that point. But from time to time, we experience those catastrophes, those acts of betrayal of the thing that's supposed to be the most precious that we all are after. And so the church is not the terminus. The terminus is yourself with God.
Yeah.
But just look over the course of history, how many wars have we had resulting from the church? Today we're talking about the grand jury report, but you know that in the 12th century, Catholics and Protestants were at wars for decades and decades, killing each other in the most savage way.
Yeah, right.
Inflicting upon each other's pain in the most savage way.
Yeah.
And these are people who we look up to. We consider to be somehow holding the torch of, you know, of the truth. But it's just the contrary.
Yeah. They've been armored up.
It's just the contrary. And let me just move ahead and think what this is. What this is. You know, the hierarchy in the church, as it was designed, you know, with men being the bosses, you know, with women being silenced completely, you
know. It wasn't always like that.
Well,
but
exactly, yeah.
You know, go ahead. Yeah, but so it was after A.D.,
yeah.
So after Jesus' death.
Yes.
There was more of a matriarchy.
Yes.
Like women were...
played important roles in church.
Right.
Until everything has been turned upside down, you know. And they pretty much obliged all these priests not to be married, which in my sense, I could be overdoing it, but I think it's probably one of the causes of all these tragedies, because it's just counter-natural.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's against
nature. We're a sexual being.
Yeah, we are sexual being.
We shouldn't be taught that we should be afraid of it or save it all for...
Or sexuality is a bad thing.
Right.
Hundreds of priests having committed this?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So this is a problem, you know, not being married as, you know, when you see the way certain monks live, you know, people who choose by themselves to be not married for a noble cause, quote unquote, they choose it by themselves, you know, and they know how to live by those rules. But when you grab just a bunch of people, you put them in a seminary and told them, don't get married. For the rest of your life. And they accept to do so just because they want to be accepted and to become priests. Well, guess what? That's going to come back on them.
Well, I think that's when the grooming starts.
Yes. Soon or later, that's going to come back because they have these sensations.
Yeah.
The need to become
to
observe celibacy didn't, in fact, originate from their own soul as a serious need that would help them grow spiritually. No, this is something external from them. This is completely fabricated and imposed upon them, you know, for probably economic reasons. And that should be another debate, another idea we could talk a lot about. Why? What's behind the fact that priests had to become, had to observe celibacy? What's behind that? You know, political and economical reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
but we'll get back to that later, probably.
Okay, let's have another conversation and we'll talk more about the details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you see, so it's just hypocrisy and hypocrisy, continual hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And what makes people become victim of those people is that we all held them in high esteem. You know, for most people, you know, coming from Africa, I can tell you that the average Catholic person in Africa tends to look at the priest like a semi-god.
Yeah.
You know.
It used to be that here, too.
You know, we hold them in such high esteem that we are so blindfolded and cannot expect any mistreatment from these people who, in fact, represent, quote unquote, Jesus on earth.
Right.
Or God, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. So, So this is where we're at. We're rumbling with it.
Yes.
We're figuring out what does this mean? We're talking amongst those who want to talk about it. I'm really not interested at this point in having a conversation about the media's trying to take down the church. No, we did it to ourselves. You know, the Pope, it starts at the top.
Yes.
This is a hierarchy, a structure that has been put in place and used as a way to control people and have power over them and control how they think and how they behave in life. It's not natural, and it's wrong. And so I don't want to be in a position with people in conversation where they're telling me that I'm now sinning because I'm not going to church. You know, the judgment here needs to be like released. And I just want genuine conversations about what people are experiencing. What are they feeling? What does this mean for their lives? What does this mean for their faith? Maybe there's an entrepreneurial opportunity here to have people join together in formulating their own communities. When we look for, you know, it's man's greatest journey to find meaning. I mean, that's our overall journey in life. And there's so many different places and resources that we can get to kind of carve out our own journey. And I've been doing that for a long time. And so I don't have any, I'm not harboring anything against anyone. I would really like to hear what other people are experiencing. So if you're receiving this podcast through LinkedIn, through Twitter, through Facebook, or through email, or on iTunes, you can't really respond, but you can go to wementor.com and you can click on to connect with me, and you can write in a sheet or form and submit it to me, or you can go to nancy@wementor.com and you can describe to me how you're doing. Make sure you include your name, your email address, and your phone number, and I would be glad to talk with you about what you're going through, and we'll have some more podcast sessions when we describe what some of the listeners are experiencing, so that we can have an open dialogue and we can come together as a community. This this doesn't need to bring it, pull us apart in who's staying and who's going and all, you know, what should we believe? No, the data's here and it's growing evidence that there is this whole way of how they're operating. And it's now called the playbook for concealing the truth. And it is good to know what the seven ways in which is happening, because that's what other institutions also use to conceal truth. So I think we need to be well aware of it. And we need to talk about it with each other, not make judgments, not emotionally, you know, cut each other down, but use this as a way to become stronger people and sort through this hard truth right now.
Absolutely. Well, Nancy, I can tell you are so devastated by this, and I can read a lot of emotion on you.
Yeah.
But I just want to tell you that we've been speaking almost for 50 minutes now. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe we can continue this conversation next time. There's a lot to be said.
Yeah.
And you're totally right when you say we need to live with this and, you know, meditate on it, you know, turns it in all aspects and think thoroughly about it, there's a lot to be said.
Yeah, and we need to feel our way through it. You
yes.
know, if we become callous,
yes.
that's the bigger danger.
Yes.
We need to take these raw emotions and figure out a way to keep processing through them so that we can figure out how we want to move forward.
Absolutely.
So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being part of our larger community. And we'll see you all next Monday when we digest the next part of this truth.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. See you next week.